It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I am standing aboard what is billed as the most historically accurate Columbus replica ship ever on this Columbus Day. It is an exact replica of the Niña, one of the ships in Columbus's fleet as he came to America in 1492. We have a Niña, we have a Pinta, we do not have a Santa Maria. I'll explain why that is. But these ships, the Niña and the Pinta, are docked in the Monongahela River on the south side of Pittsburgh. And I'm joined now by the first mate of this ship, Michael Sprague, to explain why they are here, how they were built, and where they are going. Michael Sprague, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for having me. We're here to spread information about Columbus, more specifically about these very styles of ships. These two ships, the Niña and Pinta, are caravel ships, and they were used more than any other ship during the Age of Exploration, not only by Columbus, but by any other great explorer after Columbus went to the West.
What is a caravel ship? What does that mean?
It's a style of ship designed by Prince Henry the Navigator in the 1450s, and it was originally designed to be a trade ship along the Mediterranean to be fast and outrun pirates so that their goods would actually make it to where they're supposed to be going.
And who used them?
Spanish and Portuguese.
And they were used for exploratory purposes, but they carried cargo as well, too, right?
Well, they were originally never meant for these transatlantic voyages. They were just meant for trade and to make sure that the trade actually made it. Other ships at this time, ships very similar to the Santa Maria, which was also a large cargo ship, was very slow and clumsy and could easily be caught up.
So what convinced Columbus that it was a good idea to have these ships do something they apparently were not meant to do?
At this time, there really wasn't ships designed to make these huge transatlantic voyages. Most long voyages would stay along the coast the whole time. So, I mean, it's just to pick and choose your best luck. It was probably with the most modern ship designed by one of the best navigators ever, Prince Henry the Navigator.
And if he didn't know that the ships could withstand these long voyages as well as the weather that they might encounter, there must have been some very dangerous voyages or dangerous aspects to the voyages that Columbus undertook.
Yeah, of course. I mean, even today, crossing the Atlantic Ocean is not always a guaranteed safe trip, and to take something like this out on, you know, huge waters would be terribly dangerous. His second voyage, he lost 16 ships.
There's a tour coming through, so we're going to walk to the other side of the ship here. And as I walk from one side to the other, it's about, I'm going to say it's about 26 feet. Is that an accurate distance?
Over here on the Niña, it's about 18 feet.
Oh, 18 feet on this part. All right. Well, the side of the ship here, what do you call this? I'm going to knock on wood down here. That side of the ship is... It comes up to about my hip, so it's not very tall. I suppose it would be pretty easy just to maybe go overboard, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it could be. This ship being built to its historical size kind of has that, where there's a lot of things are a lot shorter. There's not a whole lot of headroom down below and in the aft area of the ship. And our railings are not as high as Coast Guard might like. Out here on the main deck, it's perfectly safe, you know, hip level's good. Up on our raised deck, which people are not allowed to tour on board the Niña, they can on the Pinta, the railing goes about to the back of your knee. That's just how it was back then. People were a lot shorter, about 5 foot tall on average, where today, you know, we're about a foot taller on average.
Part of the point of redesigning these ships, of rebuilding them, was to create exact scale models, as we mentioned earlier. But why was it done? Aside from the fact that people can get a feel for what it was like to be on the Niña or the Pinta, what was the point of this?
I see the point happen every day. It's to really give people a great visual, hands-on education about it. And it's been proven that that's sometimes the best way to learn is when people can actually see and feel and experience it. We have school groups on right now that are all of them, I'm sure, shocked about how small this ship is. And then they get excited about the kind of things, they get really into it. It's a lot more exciting and more personal than a book.
And who decided to build these replicas?
A group of people in the early 80s called the Columbus Foundation started funding and research for the Niña. And after the Niña was completed in 1991 to be ready for the quincentennial of Columbus Day in 1992, 14 years after that, the Pinta was able to be built. And then they've been touring together for the last 6 years.
And talk about how authentic the building process was.
Yeah, when the Niña was completed, there wasn't a single power tool that was used in her construction. Even some of the things that we could have done in a matter of hours, they wanted to do it the most historically accurate way, using the same tools. So even some of our masts that are 50 to 60 feet tall, they spent a month putting them into the boat using A-frames and lines and pulleys, where they could just use a crane and get it done in a couple of hours.
So no modern tools were used, nothing that wouldn't have been available in the 15th century was used to build these?
Yeah, exactly. Chisels, axes, adzes, very, very easy, simple tools that have been around for a very long time.
I heard that the Niña was Columbus's favorite vessel. Why is that?
Well, his first ride on board the Santa Maria was not the best. She was a very large, clumsy ship, an older design than these caravels, a design called a Nao, spelled N-A-O. And she was about twice as large as the Niña is, but the shape of her hull was that of a barrel. So it'd be like dragging a barrel through the water. It's not very streamlined, it's not going to go very fast, and it's not going to feel good while it's going through either. It's just not natural for water. Where the caravels were built with more of a point to their front and cut through the water a lot better. Even though they're about half the size, they seem to be better built for water.
What was life like on these ships?
Well, they had to have storage for over a year. So everything down below, where most people would think that they would be living, was full of all these provisions that they needed. Extra line, extra wood, spare sails. I mean, anything that they would need for an entire year, they'd have to have it on board, including all their food, most of which would be dried, pickled, or salted. So their crew would have been sleeping out on the deck in the weather and the wash of the waves all the time for 9 months to a year at a time.
Let's walk over to a grating here where we can actually look at the hold and what was down below. I'm looking at a ladder, a step ladder, and apparently stuff was stored here. What was down here?
They would have kept, along with their spare sails, line, and lumber, they would have even had live animals down here, like chickens, goats, pigs, and even small horses that they would have kept in slings to prevent them from breaking their legs while the boat rocked.
How long was a typical length of time to spend traveling abroad back in Columbus's day?
Well, it took them at least a month to cross, and then while you're there, you're going to want to take a lot of notes of the land that you're seeing, even draw out a map, and that would be a very lengthy process to go around these islands. So they would spend 9 months to about a year.
All right then, well, let's go from the Niña over to the Pinta. Shall we go, Michael?
Yeah, of course.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and it's Columbus Day, and we're finding ourselves aboard replicas of the ships that were in Columbus's fleet. Earlier, we were on the Niña. Now we are over on the Pinta, and there's an American flag flying from the ship and the Niña as well. I'm guessing Columbus didn't have that handy at the time, back in 1492.
No, he was a few hundred years before that, but most of our crew is American, and here we are traveling in America.
Now, this ship is a little bigger than the original, and why is that?
We made this ship 15 feet longer and 6 feet wider. When it was originally built, it was built to take day sails in the Cayman Islands. You'd take people out, feed them, entertain them a little bit, and then drop them back off at port. So the size allows us to be more agreeable with the Coast Guard. We can also fit a lot more people. And we changed a few things. The railing that we talked about earlier, it's a little higher over here. So that now we can allow you to go to our raised deck and wander about. Down below, it's kind of nice and fancy where it would have been like a wet bar. Today, we've changed things. About 5 years ago, the Pintus joined the Niña in touring around the United States together. And it's what we will continue to do. It's been working out really well, the two ships together. The Niña is not big enough to handle as popular as we have been.
And this ship has been to some interesting places around the world, including sailing through the Panama Canal. What was that like?
Yeah, the Niña sailing through the Panama Canal, we haven't done it in 6 years. I've only done it for two. I've met three or four of the people on board who have made that trip. And it just seems like a terribly awful trip. Areas with great wind, weeks without land, and then customs through the Panama Canal. And then you finally get to California. You get to tour the West Coast for a little bit, and then you have to make the whole trip again after not even a month or so of being on the West Coast. So it just seems like a really long trip, which is exciting, but I think I might pass on it if I have the chance.
What memories will you take from this experience?
I mean, I've learned a lot of different trades being on board the ship. I do a little bit of handiwork here and there, just with like anything you do in the house, electrical, some plumbing. I installed a toilet a couple weeks ago. And then I know all the rigging on this boat. I know so many knots. But more than anything, the thing that I love the most is all the people that I've had the ability to live with. It's like having a bunch of brothers and sisters that I get to live with, some for just a month and some for, you know, the whole 2 years I've been on.
Now I'm going to ask you a question that you've probably been asked before, but where is the Santa Maria?
Short answer, at the bottom of the Caribbean where she belongs. But the truth is, we won't build her ever. One, as we discussed earlier, the Niña was his favorite ship, and he didn't care much for the Santa Maria. The Santa Maria only made half of a single voyage out of all four voyages that Columbus made, and it was her design that was at fault. She has a draft of 14 feet, and that's how much boat is beneath the water, where these ships only draft 7 feet. So where we travel around the country, we're usually guaranteed 9 to 12 feet. On the inland rivers, where all the barge traffic you might see, we're guaranteed 9 for the barges to go through. So we're always clear there as long as we stay in the markers. Well, she would require 14 feet, so she's completely restricted from any of the rivers that we travel in. And even along the Gulf Coast and the Atlantic Coast, once you pull into a harbor, you lose a lot of the depth from the ocean, and it can still be, you know, as shallow as 9 to 12 feet there. So she'd be almost immobile if we built her.
Let's walk over to the other side of the ship here and get a little closer to the Monongahela. And as we stand here looking over the side of the ship, which barely comes up to about our belt levels, and you look over at the water and it's so close, have you ever been tempted just to kind of take a jump in the water, whether here in Pittsburgh or somewhere else?
I haven't jumped into the Ohio River yet, but there are many places where myself and some of the crew members have jumped off the boat and into the water on an evening. And, you know, the captains wouldn't be much of a fan for it, and I never personally seen it, but sometimes we even grab some of the lines and use them to swing off the boat.
Sounds like good times. And from here, where is the Niña headed next and the Pinta?
We're going back the other way on the Ohio River. We're going to go down the Kiwanis River and reach Charleston, West Virginia. And then after that, we're going to make our way down the Tom Bigbee Waterway into Mobile Bay and back into the Gulf of Mexico.
And from Pittsburgh, that's not a very long drive to Charleston, but how long does it take for a vessel like this to make that voyage?
Moving at a maximum of about 8 miles per hour, it could take us 2 to 3 days to get to Charleston.
Well, I wish you a bon voyage, and I thank you for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh, the first mate of the Niña and the Pinta, Michael Sprague. It's been a pleasure visiting with you. Thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Happy Columbus Day.